Bruce Williamson is from Rail Future at the leading independent organisation campaigning for better rail services for passengers and freight. Bruce, good morning to you.
Good morning.
You're not happy then?
No, I'm not, no. Well, obviously, I think this is a, you know, yet another sort of kick in the teeth for the motorists, for rail passengers, certainly not for motorists as well. It's an interesting contrast with motorists because fuel duty for motorists hasn't gone up. The price of fuel is about the same as what it was, I don't know, 8 years ago. And yet rail passengers have suffered, you know, inflation-busting rail fare increases year after year in that same period. I think rail fares have gone up like 30%. So this is actually a war on the rail passenger.
Bruce, it's Grant here, but Grant. I know it's a very complicated question, complicated answer, but why? Are we basically supplementing the promise for new carriages and new trains?
Well, that's the argument put forward, isn't it? That, you know, we've got to pay for the investment in the railway. And obviously we have to pay for it somehow. But, you know, the issue is, I suppose, what's the fairest and best way to pay for it? And compared to our European counterparts, you know, the passenger pays a much bigger chunk. We have the most expensive rail fares in Europe.
But just to interrupt you on that, sorry, Bruce, but that's because of the fact that they're often state subsidised elsewhere, aren't they? And the point is, we don't like paying more taxes, so actually we pay less. We pay less towards them.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there is another factor as well, of course, which is the, you know, our industry costs, the costs of running the railway in this country are much higher than in other European countries. And I suppose it's the government's failure to sort of control industry's costs means that the poor old rail passenger is paying the price for this. You know, there is investment going on in the railway, and obviously that's very welcome. You know, we all need more space on our carriages, some newer trains and so on. It seems that the rail passenger in this country is treated very unfairly, I think.
Do you think amongst rail passengers there is an appetite for renationalisation of train services?
Yeah, very much. I think polling consistently shows that it's a very popular policy. And obviously, under the Conservative government, it certainly ain't going to happen. There's a very political question, isn't there, about, you know, who's going to win the next election, which is sort of beyond my pay grade, I suppose.
But having said that, Bruce, they weren't very good when they were nationalised, were they?
I was just remembering about the 70s. You it was always more by luck than judgment that you arrived anywhere on time.
I think you know, it's very easy to look at British Rail, if you like, through the opposite of rose-tinted glasses. But actually, British Rail did very well. They did a great job of running a railway on a shoestring budget. And there are some things they got very, very right. I mean, we're still using the Intercity 125s that were built by British Rail more than 40 years ago. And they're still running reliably and are still our favourite trains. Nationalisation, I think it's very important to realise it isn't a magic bullet, but I think it would have some impact on those industry costs I was mentioning, because the privatised system is very complex, and that complexity introduced costs, which obviously we all have to bear one way or another. But I think we need to appreciate that the whole railway system, even under privatisation, is still run by the government, effectively. Hmm. So we go from one system run by the government to another system run by the government, and it wouldn't, you know, there wouldn't be drastic changes.
Yeah, I think the thing is, I was listening to Julia Hartley-Brewer discussing this on the day that it was announced about the fares going up, and she was saying the point is, if you're a commuter, you're taking advantage of living in a cheaper place than you are if you live in within tube distance of your work. So this is just really one of those things. You're just going to have to suck it up because that's the extra cost of living wherever you're living. And there isn't that. That was part of me thought, oh, yeah, actually, that is a good point. You know, after all, if you live in, I say, central London, but if you live, as I said, within the bounds of a tube, then you're paying so much for your rent that actually this is still better than living there.
It is possibly, I suppose, and also there's the time spent commuting as well. But, you know, this is, I think it's dangerous to look at this in terms of, you know, you're paying the cost and you're taking advantage of it. So why should the taxpayer pay for this? Mm. But I think we need to realise that the rail industry, the rail system, it's actually a great driver of economic growth. And if you look at a city like London, I mean, London's a great example, of course, because you imagine London without the tube and without the railways, it just wouldn't function.
Well, it grinds to a halt and everybody stays at home.
Well, indeed, yeah, it's bad enough even when it works well. But, I mean, yeah, you know, clearly, without the railways, we just couldn't survive. And I think we need to recognise that the railways make a great contribution, you know, to the growth of the economy and to society. And that there's great sort of value in the railways, investing in the railways, which we do reap long term. It's a great investment.
There's another element to this as a rail traveller, is that you get very, very confused by how much tickets cost, because, you know, you have this off-peak away days and the returns at certain times. It's very, very complicated to know how to get the best deal. I wonder whether it's made deliberately complicated.
Well, you're absolutely right. It's an absolute nightmare. It's something we've campaigned on for some time. It is very complex. It's not done deliberately to confuse the passenger, but it is done deliberately to manage passenger demand. The rail industry will argue, and it's also true, that we have some of the cheapest fares in Europe if you're prepared to sort of hunt for those particular bargains, you know, the super apex off-peak, you know, that you buy 4 weeks in advance or whatever, you can get some fantastic bargains. But that's, you know, what that's not really to the passenger's advantage, you know, because the passenger just wants to, you want to get on a train now, don't you, and get a decent fare.
But Bruce, the point is that why should we have to hunt for the bargains? Why can't the bargains be presented to us? That's part of the problem.
I totally agree. It's a nightmare. You know, we shouldn't have to jump through hoops. We should be presented with, you know, cheap, easy fares as soon as you want to hop on a train. But, you know, what the reason for this, of course, is that, you know, we, the passenger, are being managed to suit the needs of the railway rather than the railway being managed to suit the needs of the passenger.
Bruce, thank you very much. That's Bruce Williamson from Rail Future, which is an independent organisation campaigning for better rail services for passengers and freight.